Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
President Trump is making a lot of big moves on the energy and environment front, or preparing to. Last week, he green-lighted the Keystone XL pipeline out of Canada after it was stopped by the Obama administration. Tomorrow, he's slated to sign a big executive order pushing domestic oil, coal, and gas, and reversing the Obama Clean Power Plan. We want to look at where Trump energy policy is going. You can join us. How do you see President Trump's moves here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter or Facebook, On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Jen DeLuey, energy and environment reporter for Bloomberg. Jen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Middlebury, Vermont, is a man who can fairly be called one of the president's biggest opponents on the environment, Bill McKibben, author, environmentalist, founder of the environmental group 350.org, distinguished scholar at Middlebury College. In 2011 and 12, he led protests against the Keystone XL pipeline in front of the White House, spent 3 days in jail in Washington. Bill McKibben, welcome back to On Point.
Hey, Tom, good to be with you.
First, Jen, on the Keystone XL pipeline, this is the one that would bring tar sands oil out of Canada. There was so much controversy and resistance, and it got nixed. But it's what exactly has the president done? Is it really fully green-lighted, or what's happened, Jen?
Well, the president has really only given it authorization at the federal level. His State Department approved a permit that would allow the construction of this pipeline, which crosses the border with Canada. But there's so much more left to go in terms of pipeline approvals happening and pending at the state level. In Nebraska, for instance, there's not even a route approved. There are regulators there are going to spend the next 6 months or more talking about that, discussing that, weighing that. And you have potential litigation also in South Dakota, challenging the route through that state. So there's quite a bit more steps to go. This is just one level of approval that TransCanada needed to build the project.
Bill McKibben, you fought hard against the Keystone XL pipeline and for a time, even now, appeared maybe to have won. Do you think it will eventually, in the Trump years, be built?
I have no real idea, Tom. I mean, they're going to keep pressing on it, but with each month that goes by, the thing makes less and less. I mean, it made no sense 6 years ago, but, you know, in the last 6 years, the price of a solar panel's dropped in half. We've had the three hottest years ever measured on this earth, and the price of oil has fallen in half. So all those things make it into what was already a dumb idea, a ludicrous one that's being done only to kind of please the oil industry donors and friends of the president. But it's preposterous, but then a number of preposterous things seem to be happening in our country right at the moment.
I mean, you've paid close attention in the past. I don't know how closely you're following this now, Bill. Do you see a path, given the Republican majority on Capitol Hill, given Donald Trump in the White House, given what you know about the states involved here, do you see a path where this actually might happen and that oil, tar sands oil will come?
The Washington part they can do. I mean, they've basically done. But there are enormous forces on the ground, people like Jane Kleb in Bold, Nebraska, people like the Native American communities that fought so hard on the Dakota pipeline. Those same forces are in play here, and unlike the Dakota one, this one isn't built yet. There's no pipe in the ground, so they've got a long ways to go. And frankly, one of the things that makes it less and less likely is the financing for it. Why anyone would want to pour money into this project at this point is beyond me, and there's more and more pushback against the banks that are trying because it's so clearly out of touch with the times. Look, yesterday at noon, the state of California set a new record. At noontime yesterday, 56% of the electricity in the state was coming from renewable energy. That's clearly the future. Building a pipeline for tar sands oil that's supposed to last for 50 or 60 years to pay back its backers, that's nuts.
Jen, you're watching this closely. What is the energy industry expecting here? I mean, they must be handicapping this all the time and, you know, going long or shorting or you name it, depending on whether those fossil fuels come into the system or not. Are people beginning to bet that it will happen or not, Jen?
Well, you know, the shippers that have contracted space on this pipeline, you know, supposedly they are holding firm. They've been used to waiting on this project. I mean, this TransCanada first applied, you know, almost 9 years ago to build this thing. So I think waiting is what they're used to getting. At the same time, we are seeing a lot more options come online for moving crude out of Canada. Other pipelines have been approved. So it's not quite the situation that you saw 8-9 years ago when, you know, these producers who are extracting oil sands crude out of Canada were desperately trying to find ways to bring it to market. Now they are seeing more options come online. And that's a real question for the developers of Keystone XL, whether this capacity is as urgently needed as it was 8 years ago.
Cole in Springfield, Illinois. You're on the air with Jen DeLoey and Bill McKibben. What do you see, Cole?
Thank you for taking my call, Tom. So what I see is that this is Canadian oil coming from, you know, the tar sands in Canada and going to Washington State, I believe, to be shipped elsewhere, like China and abroad.
So what's your point? I mean, I don't think it goes to Washington State, but what's your point there, Cole?
My point is that last week I heard President Trump talking about how this project is supposed to help reduce our dependency on foreign oil. Well, this is foreign oil.
This is a very good point. And it's not going to Washington State. It's going to the Gulf of Mexico. But the thing that makes it particularly funny is that the president has said about 175,000 times that it was, among other things, going to be run through American pipe and American steel.
Yeah.
And that was all. And last week, his administration said, oh, you know what, forget that. Build it with any pipe you want. Apparently, a lot of the pipe that's already been built is built with, you guessed it, Russian steel.
Russian steel, no less. Bill, what's your interpretation of why Donald Trump is pushing for this?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump thinks that climate change is a Chinese hoax. He runs a party that's basically a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry. And they're going to do everything they can to try and keep the oil, coal, and natural gas industries happy. I mean, that's the one consistent thing in all their politics. This is the, you know, in the course of the next week, we're going to get rid of Obama's clean power plan to try and help the coal industry. And last week, we got rid of or started the process of getting rid of higher mileage standards for cars, in a desperate effort to stop the demand destruction for gasoline that's clearly coming as people, you know, produce $30,000 electric cars that people want to buy.
Of course, that was a main plank from the Obama years and the American commitment to reducing CO2 and fighting climate change. Here was Scott Pruitt, the EPA administrator, Donald Trump's ABC yesterday with George Stephanopoulos, talking about what's coming, what the president will move on tomorrow.
Our action starting on Tuesday, shortly after the executive order, will make sure that whatever steps we take in the future will be pro-growth, pro-environment, but within the framework of the Clean Air Act, and it will be legal.
But will it bring back coal jobs?
I think absolutely it will. It will bring back manufacturing jobs across the country, coal jobs across the country.
Wind down the clean power plant. Now, that's supposed to be very complicated. Do you see coal jobs coming back? Is that what's driving this or something else?
Coal jobs have a number of problems stacked against them, and the coal industry does in general. Clean power plant is a piece of that, but it's a relatively small piece when you look at some of the other considerations. Coal jobs actually have been in decline for decades now. Partly because in recent years, demand has slumped because, you know, of other pollution rules targeting mercury and other traditional pollution. But then you do also have curbs on carbon dioxide. What is interesting is that utilities are making some of these changes away from coal toward natural gas and renewables simply because of price. Natural gas is now cheaper than coal in general. So there's already a cost mechanism, a market force that's pushing them away from coal. And in the mines themselves, even as you have slumping demand for coal domestically, in the mines themselves, you see a lot more automation. You see automated tools to extract coal, to mine coal, that's actually displacing a lot of workers. So there's a real question, even if Trump, you know, can disband and undo the Clean Power Plan, a process that will take a couple of years and will be challenged in court, there's a real question of how you can really bring back jobs where it's automation that's pushing folks out of the mines, not just regulation.
But Jen, you're at Bloomberg News. I mean, you pay a lot of attention to business there. The Scott Pruitt claim here, the EPA administrator's claim, is that this is pro-growth. When you, you know, let the oil run through the pipelines and sort of throw the traces off of fossil fuel development. Does the business community agree with that? That Donald Trump has promised faster growth. If they do all these things, I mean, maybe it will trash the climate, but would it give them a short run or, you know, some years of higher growth rates?
Well, certainly broad business groups and the companies that represent fossil fuels think so. I mean, they would like to see, you know, many of the hurdles to development.
Yeah, but wait a minute. That's just for their bottom line. I mean, the GDP, much bigger than even an oil company.
There are jobs tied to petrochemical development that will increase in terms of in response to some of these regulatory changes if they happen. I think the broader question is what happens 10, 15, 20 years down the line when you have U.S. automakers competing to sell cars to a worldwide market, and when you have renewable developers that are trying to sell solar panels, try to erect wind
turbines. You mean they
might
be less competitive down the line if they lean back into fossil fuels now?
That's certainly the argument you hear, that we need to stay competitive, and the way we do that is, as a country, is by leading on climate.
RJ is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. RJ, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hey, Tom. I was just wanting to call. I had the question, does the administration have any sort of plan moving forward regarding, you know, atmospheric science with the climate, considering signing all these bills, pushing forward like coal and dirty energy, basically?
Yeah. Bill McKibben, are they just putting a match to the climate, or what about climate science?
Plan about atmospheric science. You ever see those three monkeys with the one with the hands over his eyes and his ears and his mouth? That's their plan.
See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, see nothing.
They're studying research. They're beginning to shut down funding for the satellites that monitor things like the rapidly diminishing ice at the poles. They're doing, you know, they're even scrubbing the websites of language about climate change. It's the thing that cannot be mentioned anymore. And that's a shame because it's the single biggest fact on the planet we live. The New York Times today on the front page has a story about what they're describing as the greatest humanitarian disaster since World War II, the spreading drought across much of northern parts of Africa. It's putting 20 million people at risk of famine. I mean, while we're talking today, the worst floods in the history of Peru have 700,000 people displaced from their homes. These are things that happen now every day around the world. Earlier this month in Kansas and Oklahoma, ironically, the home of Scott Pruitt, we've seen the worst wildfires ever for this time of year in our country. They're calling it the Katrina of the plains. There's so much damage and devastation left. And yet, in Washington, you'd think it was 1940 or 1950, full speed ahead, coal. I mean, the craziness of it is underlined by the fact that there's far more people now at work putting up solar panels than mining coal. That's where the jobs are if we want jobs. The only thing that we're protecting the profit margins of a few fossil fuel barons, and that's it.
Angela in Lakeland, Florida. Thank you for calling, Angela. You're on.
Yes, sir. My understanding is that Mr. Trump, forgive me for not calling him president, also has financial holdings. He owns stock in the XL pipeline and in the North Dakota Access Pipeline. And that would be a very, very excellent incentive for him to have approved it, would it not?
Let me ask, Jen, what do you know? Does Donald Trump have a financial stake in these two pipelines?
He divested his campaign officials told us during the campaign he divested from his holdings for the developer of the Dakota Access Pipeline and some other projects. He certainly did have investments in this space prior to becoming president.
So how do you interpret his push here? Is it to try and push up GDP? Is it, Bill McKibben would say, you know, he's beholden to the fossil fuel industry? How do you interpret it, Jen?
Well, certainly for you know, the coal miners that he has promised to, you know, he's promising to bring back their jobs. And of course, it is an open question whether he can do any of that. But those are the folks that helped elect him to the White House. I mean, you have folks in Pennsylvania, voters in Pennsylvania and West Virginia and in Ohio who for whom coal and industrial development is and manufacturing is incredibly important. And I think he does feel some need to to serve those people, those voters. And of course, oil and gas and coal companies are strategically aligned with the Republican Party, you know, and have been for some time. I don't think it's a surprise.
Bill, do these moves, speaking of alignment, do they kill American alignment with the possibility of reversing climate change or stopping the rate of change?
Yeah, absolutely. America is now a rogue nation, the rogue nation around climate change. Even as countries like China are now going full bore, putting renewables in as fast as they can, official government policy here is, if not to formally abrogate the Paris Climate Accords, then to do all the things that would make it impossible for us to meet the targets that we pledged to meet 2 years ago. So they are in full ownership now of climate change. They've made the most significant wager that any administration's ever made, which is that physics doesn't work, and they get to own the absolute worst set of disasters that we've ever seen.
Well, there's not much satisfaction in that if things go south and people suffer. What about the market? We hear people saying, Bill, that the market's going to come in here. As you say, that there's such a compelling case for alternative energy, it's going to happen anyway.
Renewable energy will happen. The problem, Tom, is that it won't happen fast enough on its own to close the gap that global warming's created. We need to make that happen. That's why there'll be hundreds of thousands of Americans in D.C. on April 29th for this next big climate march, because this movement will continue to push for real action. Whether we can do it in the face of Trump, well, we're going to find out.
Bill McKimmon, author, environmentalist, founder of 350.org. Bill, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, man.
And Jen DeLowey, energy and environment reporter for Bloomberg News. Jen, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.